Hello, welcome to another episode of Off the Chain with Dave and Steele. Excited about the show we have for you today. We're going to talk about the food kiosk. We're going to talk about men's room graffiti. We're going to do an Unchained Melodies segment. We're going to share some book wisdom. But more than anything, we're really excited to bring a world premiere to you. This is the first time that Off the Chain with Dave and Steele is going to feature a guest. We're going to be joined today by two of our oldest friends, Jordan and Spencer. Really excited to have you on the show today, guys.
Good to be here.
Hey, Jordan.
I'll try to keep my voice from cracking.
Good luck.
This is Dave. I'm excited to have these guys here, too. We've been buddies with them since college. Of all the people in the world, Spence has spent the most amount of time watching James Bond films with me. I'm talking upwards of 15 to 20 hours worth of James Bond movie watching just me and Spence.
Congrats, guys. I was going to say, I have probably spent more time watching Spencer sleep than just about any other human alive. Spencer was my very first person I lived with outside of my family, my freshman year college roommate. And I learned very quickly that Spencer was the only person I knew then and know now is capable of sleeping with his eyes partially open. It was amazing.
I'm very protective of my stuff.
Yeah, just got to keep one eye open all the time.
That's right. I took that Metallica song to heart.
I thought he was dead at first when he had his eyes kind of open and he was asleep. Didn't know people could live like that. And Jordan, probably the best ultimate frisbee player I've ever played with. His delivery, to throw it 300 yards on a rope. Incredible skills.
I'm not going to deny it.
And Jordan, he is definitely the man that I've been to the most Mongolian grill / Chinese buffets with. I think I've been to more romantic dinners with Jordan at a Chinese buffet than with anyone else in my life.
It's your Mongolian barbecue, really.
And up until recently, Jordan was one of two ponytailed lawyers that I knew of, but I believe that he cut his hair in an effort to gain respectability.
Well, I did cut my hair, but it was for a different reason than that.
What was the reasoning behind it?
It kept getting in my baby's face while he was eating. I was holding him. I was bugging him.
Well, that's noble, actually. That's way more noble than respectability.
Yeah, it was more of a practical decision than anything else.
Yes.
It wasn't because you had been defeated in battle or something?
No, I think most all great warriors, as I think Conan the Barbarian proves, have long hair.
So guys, now that we've all talked a little bit, gotten an intro, I want to talk about something that I've been excited about lately. It comes from a book I read called A Short Stay in Hell by a guy named Stephen L. Peck. The basic premise of this is a young man in his 40s dies of cancer, a very religious man, and he finds himself awake in a room with several other people that he realizes just died as well. And there's a demon in the room. And the demon basically explains to each of them, you're in hell. Christianity was not the right religion. It was Zoroastrianism. And you're all each going to be assigned to a different particular hell. And so this guy gets assigned to a hell. The hell that he gets assigned to is a giant library where his goal, hell is not eternal. All he has to do is in this library find the book that is the perfect representation of his life without any mistakes. It's just got to say everything about his life from birth to death. He finds this book, he's able to leave. Every book that could possibly be written with the standard keyboard, I mean like every combination of characters and letters, 99.9% of these books are just gibberish.
This sounds a lot like a story by Borges. The Library of Babylon, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, the Library of Babel. That's the story.
Babel, that's
sounds
right.
Sounds exactly like it.
And that's what he based it on, is from what I understand. But I certainly wouldn't have known the short story. But that is what he based it on. And so these people are all, they're searching for their book and just finding like a small phrase that makes sense in the first 100 years is real exciting. But the thing I got the most excited about in this hell, so there's a food kiosk.
Okay.
Yeah, Jordan, what would you imagine? What do you think this food kiosk might be able to do or provide?
Well, I imagine it. Well, geez, in hell?
Yes, he's in hell, yeah.
For some reason, all I can think of is jalapeno cheddar corn dogs.
That's some people's heaven, actually, Jordan.
Yeah, it might be mine.
Spence, you got any thoughts on what this food kiosk might offer these people in hell?
It seems to me that if it were truly hell, it would offer you something that you think you want, but then it's totally disgusting when you eat it.
Yeah, jalapeno cheddar corn dogs.
No, that's not disgusting, Jordan.
For me, it'd be like a really plump-looking orange that when you open it up is just desiccated and dry. That's the thing. I love oranges. When they're ripe, they're the best. But when they're not, they're the worst. And that's exactly what you're describing, Spencer.
Yeah, so that's a good example. There are a few fruits that are like that, like cantaloupe. If it's not great cantaloupe, it's disgusting cantaloupe. So maybe it would be like the best looking cantaloupe ever, but then when you taste it, it is not right. It's not a good cantaloupe.
Mm, that does sound fairly hell-like, yes. And that sounds like every meal I've had at the hospital cafeteria for the past several months. Wait, how about you, Steele? What do you think might be available at this food kiosk in hell?
Well, if the library has every book ever written, maybe the food kiosk is every meal ever prepared. The hellish part is that you're overwhelmed with choice, and most of the combinations are awful. It's like every possible food combination. I was thinking about the Harry Potter jelly beans they had a while ago. They were terrible because it would be a bunch of normal flavors, but like every 20th jelly bean was like earwax flavored or vomit flavored. They were disgusting. And people would voluntarily eat these knowing that like 3% of all of them were awful, truly awful. But at this hell kiosk, 99.9% of the food would be those vomit jelly beans. And only rarely would you find like an intended food combination. That would be my idea.
So guys, all these thoughts are excellent. But in this book, a man in the book does a calculation and he figures out that there are more books in this library than there are electrons in our current universe. So the real hell of this place is it goes on for so long. These food kiosks, at least initially, are just like a wonderful oasis in this hell. Because at the food kiosk, you can order any food that you've ever had or someone has described to you. You can order it, and it'll come out like perfectly. So the best meal you've ever had, you could order that every time, and it'll come out, and it'll be that exact meal that you had, and it'll be delicious. It'll be perfect. So that at first, in this book, everybody's real excited about it, and they just keep getting really good food.
Wow. That sounds not so bad. Thank you, Zoroaster.
Yeah, it's if you're in hell, at least throw me a bone. Like, yeah, give me a nice food kiosk. So I'm totally on board with the idea. Like, I almost want to try out this hell just for the food kiosk.
Well, you're on the right track, unless you've converted to Zoroasterism.
Yeah, I am a middle-aged, active Mormon male, so I am the main character in this book, essentially. So my thought is, what would you guys order from this food kiosk? I did this game with my wife a couple weeks ago. We were on a 4-hour drive, and we just did this game for 4 straight hours. We just talked about food we would order from the kiosk.
Dave, you'd be so popular in our house. The only reason we plan vacations or do anything in our life, it's like food-based. We vacation based on food, and we live our lives through food. That's the secret to our happiness and our marriage, really.
Yeah, so Dave, as you're talking about all this food, did you guys like stop at a gas station to try any of the food along the way?
This was, we were driving through from here to Snowflake. There's really not many good options along the way. So as we were having this conversation, we were digging through baby snacks. Is this baby snack palatable to a grown adult? And I guess so. And we it fueled the food conversation all the more because we were eating terrible food.
So I have a story that kind of connects to this. I served a Mormon mission in the northeast of England. I went to Leeds one time, and we went to a Subway restaurant. And Subway's not known for gourmet food, but there was a guy. They call their employees sandwich artists. And
yes,
this guy really was a sandwich artist. I told him I was vegetarian, which is true. And he's like, oh, hey, let me make you something. I'm a vegetarian. So he makes a Subway sandwich, and it was the first time I'd ever had a Subway sandwich grilled. That was right when they started doing, like, warm subs. And he put feta cheese on it. And it had a bunch of other stuff. I don't even recall. But it was melted feta cheese on a toasted Subway sandwich.
I
remember thinking, this is the best sandwich I've ever had. I was into my early 20s, so I hadn't had a lot of sandwiches, I suppose, that were very good. But it was so good. And I remember for the next, like, year and a half, I'd be, like, in a grim northeast town, knocking on doors, getting rejected constantly, and just thinking about that sandwich. I was like, if I ever get back to Leeds, there's a Subway sandwich. It's the best food I have ever eaten. Maybe I'll get there.
You could definitely order that from the kiosk. I would order it still. I'm in. I'm ready.
It was really good.
I was on my mission to Italy, and pretty much almost every meal that I ate there was like the best meal I'd ever eaten in my life. One of my favorite meals was actually one of the last ones I had, and somebody had made ravioli that they put in this kind of soup, just basically ravioli with broth. And I don't remember what kind of ravioli they were, but it was really awesome. Just big ravioli, perfectly cooked, a very simple meal. I think that was basically it. We just had ravioli.
The best meal I ever had in my 20s was a meal that you recommended, Spencer. I went to Ticino, which is the Italian part of Switzerland, and there I had the aglio olio and peperoncini. It was so good. I don't know if you could explain what that is or how it's made.
So aglio olio peperoncino, aglio is garlic, olio is olive oil, and then peperoncino is red pepper flakes. So you cook up spaghetti, you boil spaghetti, and then you take a pan with some oil, and you cut up some garlic and saute the garlic, and then you sprinkle in some red pepper flakes, and then you just like douse the spaghetti in this oil stuff that you've just sauteed, and that's it. And then you can add some like Parmesan cheese or whatever. But that's all there is to it.
I couldn't believe how good it was and how simple. It was amazing.
So guys, one thing I didn't mention is in this hell you have a perfect memory. So like Spence, you would be able to remember exactly what was in that ravioli. So you would get your order correct because you would know, you would remember exactly what it was.
How can this be hell? This sounds so good.
Sign me up.
Food is all that matters.
It may not be. Actually, that's one lesson you'll learn from the book, Steele, if you read it, is there's more to existence than food, however unreal that seems at this point.
Yeah, we'll see.
So, Jordan, what do you got? What are you thinking?
Well, I'm going to talk about something from the present day, something you can actually go get now. I live in Las Vegas, one of the best cities for food, I think, because you can get everything almost from anywhere.
Is that true, Jordan?
It is true.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
They do have a lot of the world-renowned chefs have restaurants here, so we try to eat at them. This thing that I'm going to talk about is actually off the strip. It's one of the best burger places in Las Vegas. It's Asian-inspired burgers called Bachi Burger.
Jordan,
yeah.
Do you know, I don't know if we've had the conversation, that burgers are my favorite food.
Dave, this burger is off the chain.
Okay.
It is so good.
Yeah, I want to hear.
Are you ready? Okay. It's called the Miyagi-san Grass-Fed Wagyu Burger. Okay. So first off, it's named after Mr. Miyagi.
Yes.
I think we all know where that comes from.
Yes.
Yeah, the Karate Kid. Okay, and this is what's on it. Ready? First of all, Wagyu beef, right?
What kind of beef? Wacky beef?
Wagyu.
I don't know what that is.
It's amazing. It's a special Japanese beef. You're a vegetarian, so, you know.
Yeah.
I tried that for a little while, but I can't do it. I see a cow and my mouth starts to water, like literally. It's a special kind of Japanese beef that's been you know, it's supposed to have extra marbling and that supposedly massage the cows and stuff like that.
Oh, yeah. I love
so it's like this is spoiled cow beef. It's like a 7 or 8 ounce burger. It's got chili mayo on it, a fried egg, furikake, caramelized bacon, and crispy onion rings on this, on this like homemade brioche bun that they toast. And it's so good. And you got to get it with the truffle parmesan fries.
Wait, so Jordan, my question, so everything on that sounds like unbelievable to me, except for I enjoy fried eggs, but I've never had a fried egg on a burger. Is that actually a good choice?
Yes, it's a fried egg, but if they do it right, the yolk is still a tiny bit runny.
Oh, that sounds great.
So you get that delicious egg yolk running all around. Yeah, it mixes with the bread. It's very, very good.
Oh, man.
So is it something like fugiyaki? What was the
furikake?
I didn't recognize.
Furikake, it's like a Japanese seasoning, like a mixture of different things. I think it's got fish in it, sesame seeds.
It's like a dry seasoning?
Yeah, yeah, it's a dry seasoning, like seaweed. Okay. It's black, probably salt.
All right. Yeah,
so they've got all kinds of burgers. They've got one that's got like kimchi on it, different kinds.
I love cheese. Yeah, cheeseburgers, that's my favorite food in the world. So, Jordan, next time we're in Vegas, if we see you, I think we need to go there and make it happen.
No problem.
So, what about you, Dave? What would you pick?
Obviously, I put quite a bit of thought into this. What's great about this hell is you're there for a long time. So you just get to keep ordering more and more stuff, anything you've ever thought of. You're going to get it at some point. When I was 18, I worked at this seafood restaurant in New Jersey. I would make these crab cakes with their recipe, just, you know, fresh lump crab meat. There'd be like mustard in them, just a perfect recipe. And then you would saute them in olive oil on a little pan. And it didn't matter what you got them with. Whatever, vegetables, potatoes, anything, it didn't matter. It was just a perfectly cooked, perfectly flavored crab cake with just large chunks. Lots of times, if you get like a cheap crab cake, it'll be like kind of real shredded meat and you'll barely get the flavor, but a good crab cake has just these large chunks of crab meat.
That sounds amazing. I love crab cakes.
Yeah, so Jordan, had good and bad crab cakes?
Oh, I've definitely had bad crab cakes, and I've had amazing crab cakes.
The gulf between them is gigantic. It's like, you offer even a bad crab cake, I don't even want to eat it. I don't want to even smell it.
It's not even the same food.
No. So anyway, the food kiosk is awesome, guys. We could probably talk about different favorite meals we'd order from this kiosk for forever. But great game. Play it with somebody. Just talk about food, because all of a sudden, like, 3 hours goes by, and you're still talking about food, and you're still really enjoying your conversation.
Thanks, Dave. That's a great suggestion. This next segment really ties in well with this, because it's connected in a way to food. It's associated usually with a little bit less pleasure, but it has to do... Well, I guess... I'm a connoisseur of men's room graffiti, I'll just say. And I think I first noticed this a couple of years ago. It was a tiled bathroom, and there's grout, and there's all these little tiny sayings written in pen in the grout. And they just replaced a bunch of words with the word grout. So, no grout about it, or like anything, just said grout. There's like thousands of these little puns. This is really interesting. And so I started looking for graffiti in men's room. You're going to find a lot of profane, vulgar, really stupid, juvenile stuff. But every once in a while, you're going to find really, really interesting things. And I started a Tumblr, Men's Room Graffiti Tumblr, and I'm taking pictures of weird, interesting men's room graffiti and posting it. But the best one, still my favorite, is in the bathroom in the office that I work at. So every time I go to the bathroom there, I go check it out to make sure it's still there. It started about a year ago with someone writing, "Name your poop after a movie. I'll start the never-ending story." That was the beginning of this great men's room graffiti. And then over time, more and more and more movies have been added to it. The second one was Too Fast, Too Furious.
Oh, no.
And I was just going to open this up and say, I haven't written one on this, but I would really like to. I need some good ideas for this. What should I put up on the wall of this stall?
You gotta go with, "Oh brother, where art thou?"
I love it. That's really good.
I feel pretty comfortable with Spence's suggestion there. That's okay. Great.
A few other ones that are up there. A Bridge Too Far. The Purge. Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban. Kicking and Screaming. Django Unchained. War of the Worlds. Cloudy with the Chance of Meatballs. The one that's written, it's like scrawled in there painfully in really large letters. There Will Be Blood. That one makes me so sad.
Oh no.
The Evil Dead, Titanic, The Big Lebowski, Pokemon the Movie. That's probably my favorite one. I don't know why. Where the Wild Things Are, The Two Towers, Precious, and I think actually my favorite, though, someone wrote this, and kind of small, black ink, Cool Runnings.
Oh, yeah.
But the more I think about this, the more this works for, like, every movie title. They become hilarious if you think of it as a bowel movement instead of a movie.
The Dark Crystal?
You could have a career in this, Spence. You would knock this one out of the park.
Aliens or Alien?
Terminator.
I like the Dark Crystal. I mean, that sounds like you had a rough time, a rough go in there.
Yeah.
The problem is that movie sucks.
I've got that on DVD, The Dark Crystal.
No, that's an awful movie.
It is. Like, my childhood kept making me think, like, this is going to be good when I watch it again. And it was not.
Yeah, unfortunately, I have to agree. I kept waiting for it to get good. It just never did.
Well, it might make its way into immortality. I don't think any of the kids that are going to college these days would even know what that is. That's a good idea. The one that made me most sad, actually, and it has nothing to do with the bowel movement connection, but somebody wrote Bill and Ted's Bogus Adventure. And I thought, get it right, dummies. It's not a bogus adventure. It's a bogus journey.
Ah, jeez. Yeah, I just pulled up a list of movie names just because it's not happening for me. But every single movie name on here, like, it totally works. The Crying Game.
Oh.
Dead End.
Oh.
The Deer Hunter. It doesn't stop.
Apocalypse Now.
Walking Tall.
Stand and Deliver. The Hunt for Red October. If you're wanted to do a public service, go to the nearest men's room, take a pen or something that's not too hard to clean off, and go ahead and start that Name Your Poop After a Movie and watch it grow. I mean, we should have franchises all over the country. If you've got any great ones, submit them. We got a website. We'd love to share it with our listeners. Spread the joy. That's off the chain, I think.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Thank you for sharing that wonderful journey that you've had with us, Steele.
Homeward Bound, The Incredible Journey.
Oh, man. It's just so good, right? You just can't stop.
The Godfather. Oh, the good, the bad, and the ugly.
Yeah, Beauty and the Beast.
It's so easy to take one that doesn't even make sense and make it awesome. Like, White Man Can't Jump?
White Man Can't Jump. Those are great. Thanks, everybody.
The Artist.
Wait, Stu, the last time we spoke, we talked about toilet reading habits. Now we've got bathroom graffiti. It seems to be a preoccupation with you. Are your bowel movements going okay right now?
Yeah, they're good. They're pretty normal.
Yeah, just like once a day? You're good?
I don't know. Probably twice a day. I mean, I eat a lot of vegetables. Not a lot of meat. So my stuff's moving through the colon pretty quickly, I would imagine. I'm not an expert.
No, ideally, that's great. I mean, two a day, I think that's got to feel satisfying. I think you're doing a great job.
Yeah, I mean, I don't love going to the bathroom when I'm at work. It's you go to a big public restroom and it's kind of like I always like take the toilet paper and make a little seat on top of the seat so I'm not sitting directly on the seat. But having the men's room graffiti there, it really does cheer me up. 'Cause I'm always like going in and be like, "Did anyone add a new movie?" 'Cause it's over time, I've documented as it's grown and grown and grown, and it's just really exciting. I just try to imagine who's sitting there and being like, "Oh, I've got a great idea." And I wonder if like they have a pen on them, or if they're like, "I got a good idea. I need to come back here." And so they come back, pen in hand, and the satisfied feeling when they finally etched up their movie and added to the list. I think it's great.
Have to admit, I don't usually try to think of who has sat on the toilet before me when I'm using a public restroom.
That's what I'm saying. It's kind of not the best.
Free Willy.
Ah, so much fun. Toilet humor never gets old. So the next part of the show today, we're going to have another very special segment of Unchained Melodies. This is where we talk about some music that we've been enjoying in our lives that's really off the chain. The one that I wanted to play had to do with something we were talking about earlier. You were talking about A Short Stay in Hell, Dave. And this song, I can't stop listening to, can't stop thinking about. I play it every time I'm soothing my baby to sleep. This is like his lullaby music. It's by a band called Timber Tambor, and the song is called Demon Host.
Death, she must have been your will. A bone beneath the reaper's veil. And with your voice my belly sunk. And I began to feel so drunk. Candle, candle on my clock. Oh Lord, I must have heard you knock me out of bed as the flames licked my head and my lungs filled up black in that tiny little shack. It was real and I repent all those messages you sent clear as
man,
day.
Creepy, creepy, wonderful, beautiful song. Can't get
enough. And I watched the video beforehand.
Yeah.
And I can't get that guy's image out of my mind when I hear that song.
Wait, what does he look like, Spence? What's the deal?
There's nothing particularly creepy about him. It's just he's like totally bald, and just the video itself is kind of eerie. And it starts out with just him. You just see his face, and then they start to zoom out, and then you see these like demons that are like surrounding him. Anyway, it's
like in a shed or a garage or something. So it's kind of a weird place for demons to be, but. And they can find you anywhere, I guess.
They can.
I think baldness can contribute to creepiness in some people's minds. Not necessarily mine, but it happens. People sometimes, my best friend in college was bald, and I think he oftentimes had to deal with some prejudice because of that. Yeah.
Spencer, you had a song, I think, a folk song that you wanted to bring on the show that might be another nice segment.
You're talking about Shovels and Rope?
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't stop listening to these guys, and I think I'm just kind of late to the party. It's not like they just came onto the scene or anything. It's a duo. It's a husband and wife from South Carolina. I think they each had their own individual music careers and then collaborated and eventually got married. The song I chose was Lay Low.
Well, I probably should be drug out to sea. I can't hurt no one, no one can hurt me. At least I'd be free, and probably I'd see what caused me to be so detached completely. jumping rope through a thick cloud of smoke, fumbling through all of the layers and the notes.
Those harmonies are gorgeous, Spence.
That's kind of their thing. It's all harmonies. Yeah, just excellent, excellent music.
And really, anytime you have a husband and wife team doing vocal harmonies, like, you have me. That's all you got to tell me, and it's just adorable.
Dave, you got something you want us to cue up this week?
I guess this is a little bit different field than the ones we were just having. This is more of a rock and roll type song. Michael Cronin. Play the clip. This is a new song off of, I think, a forthcoming album. It's called Make Up My Mind.
Fading it out. Dave, man, sounds very Cheap Trick to me, almost.
Yeah, it's just pretty much straightforward pop, rock and roll. I this guy, he's worked with Ty Siegel in the past, and I've tried to get into to Ty. That guy is so prolific, I find it like intimidating to listen to his music because he's putting out a new album all the time. I think Michael's work is a little more accessible, and it happens less often, so I can keep up with what he's doing.
Cool. Thanks, Dave. We've got a couple other songs that we thought we'd throw in here. This is one by a guy named Flume, and the guest artist is named Chet Faker instead of Chet Baker. This dancer, the video, you gotta check it out. His name is Storyboard P. Amazing body control, just emotional, expressive. And the song is called Drop the Game.
It's a shame that's not a movie title.
Oh my goodness. That would win.
I've been seeing, oh, I've been seeing your soul. Give me things that I wanted to know. Tell me things that you've done. I've been feeling old, I've been feeling cold. You're the heat that I know. Listen, you are my son.
Spencer, you got something to take us out on? A great recommendation for us?
Yeah, in fact, it's called Outro. This is from a band called Wolfpack. It's a group of men that were, I think they were all raised by wolves somewhere in Eastern Europe. And they're students at the University of Michigan, came together, formed a band. They actually received or kind of achieved international fame by gaming Spotify. They put out this album called Sleepify, and it's just 30 seconds of silence for each track. And they encourage their fans to put it on repeat and just let it play all day and all night so that they can raise money for a tour. Yeah, and I think they actually got like $20,000 out of it before nice. Spotify shut them down.
Congratulations. Okay, so this is Wolfpack, and the song is Outro. That's such a classic sax riff. That's so nice, Matt.
Yeah, the saxophone's awesome. I hate saxophone, but I love that song.
Spence, is this happening in your household? Is there dance parties going on or what?
Oh, you know it. We've had many a dance party in our house to some Wolfpack songs.
That's great, Spence. You know, you turned me on to Wolfpack, and I've been recommending it to people, and everybody I recommend them to loves them, becomes obsessed with them. Thanks. Good find, Spence.
Thanks.
So that was Unchained Melodies. You now have some more music that's off the chain in your life, so you're welcome. The last segment we want to go out on today is a segment we call Book Wisdom. Up till now, I've been providing all the wisdom, and I think Dave's about sick of it.
Yeah, I'd like a different voice, a different perspective. Let's get someone that actually would eat a cheeseburger, you know? Let's hear what he has to say.
I love cheeseburgers, man. So the book wisdom today comes from the Brothers Karamazov. I was trying to think of some interesting piece of wisdom to use, and I just kind of immediately thought of this book. So there's this elder in a monastery, and he's got this woman that's like, she's having all these problems in her life. And so then he tells this story, and it's a story about a young doctor that he met and talked with. So I'll start with that. So it starts, and he says, "That's exactly what a doctor told me quite some time ago. He was not a young man, and he was certainly intelligent. He was just as sincere as you are, although he spoke in an amused tone with a sort of bitter humor. 'I love mankind,' he said, 'but I find to my amazement that the more I love mankind as a whole, the less I love individual people. In my thoughts,' the doctor told me, 'I often visualize ecstatically the sacrifices I could make for mankind, and indeed I might even accept martyrdom for my fellow men if circumstances suddenly demanded it of me. In actual fact, however, I cannot bear to spend 2 days in the same room with another person. And this I know from personal experience. Whenever someone is too close to me, I feel my personal dignity and freedom are being infringed upon. Within 24 hours, I can come to hate the best of men, perhaps because he eats too slowly or because he has a cold and keeps blowing his nose. I become a man's enemy,' he said, 'as soon as he touches me. But to make up for it, the more I hate individual people, the more ardent is my general love for mankind.'" So that's the first part, and then it skips over, and I'll read this. He says a little later on, "A true act of love, unlike imaginary love, is hard and forbidding. Imaginary love yearns for an immediate heroic act that is achieved quickly and seen by everyone. People may actually reach a point where they are willing to sacrifice their lives as long as the ordeal doesn't last too long. It's quickly over, just like on the stage, with the public watching and admiring. A true act of love, on the other hand, requires hard work and patience, and for some, it is a whole way of life."
Wow. Spencer, that was great. Thank you.
You're welcome.
I love that passage. True act of love. Takes a long time. It's hard. Thanks so much.
I like the thought on man loving mankind, but also having problems with individuals. On a daily basis, you can almost, you know, get cut off in traffic, or someone's doing something gross around you or your children. You're like, that person has no value. It's not really a nice way to think about people. It's too easy to sometimes have that knee jerk, this person stinks, but still think, oh, I love everybody, just not that guy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's a human response.
Thanks for dropping some wisdom on us, Spencer. And thanks for joining us generally today. I'd love to have you back on the show sometime.
Thanks for having me.
It's been a pleasure. So that wraps up our episode of Off the Chain today. If you'd like to hear more episodes, you can find us on the web at otc.teamawesome.org or subscribe to the podcast in iTunes or any of your other favorite podcast catchers. Hope you join us again next week for another episode of Off the Chain with Dave and Steele.
Thanks, Steele.
Thanks, Dave.
Off the Chain. It's Off the Chain.